Hey, hi, hello, fashion lovers. Do you have a burning fashion inquiry?
Should you throw out your skinny jeans? Is it worth investing in a pair of tabbies? Or do you have a more personal question? Like, what should I wear on a first date?
Ooh, good question. Or maybe you just slayed a fit and you want to show off. Hey, me and my girl are here with the solutions to all your fashion woes and ready to cheer you on for your fashion wins. So submit your questions, photos, and voice notes for the chance to have your message featured on the show at igfpodcast.com. That's igfpodcast.com. Hey, bitch, it's your girl, Shay Coulee, and welcome to another fabulous episode of It's Giving Fashion. As always, I'm joined by my BFF, the one and only Miss Tiger Lily. Oh, she's your little kitty today.
Meow. Hi, Tosh.
Hi, Tosh. Oh, my God. I'm so excited because today we are going to be talking about runways.
Ooh.
Mama, runways are, to me, they're like the cast reveal for Drag Race.
Oh, period.
You
yes.
know, you know. It's like where, it's like when the designer is like, yo, I'm about to let you see my new crop of girls. I'm about to let you see all the new looks. This is a preview of what you're about to get this year. Runways have been around, baby, since like early 1910s. And we're going to talk about the evolution of the runway. We're going to talk about most memorable runway moments. We're going to talk about a major cultural shift that not a lot of people know about called the Battle of Versailles. And we're going to talk about some runway moments that we don't live for in our favorite little section, It's Not Giving. Mm. Baby, there is so much to cover on this episode. So I am going to go and make myself a chai tea latte with soy milk. And when I come back, we are going to get into all of these runway fashions. You better work.
Sephora stores are everywhere you are, so just pop in when you need a brown lip to match your 90s playlist, a confidence boost before your interview, or a last-minute gift for mom's birthday. There's always a Sephora near you. Just pop in. Use our store locator to find your local Sephora or Sephora at Kohl's.
Walk, walk, fashion baby. Work it, move that bitch crazy. We're back. And we are talking about runways here on this week's episode of It's Giving Fashion. Wow, Tosh. I mean, what an incredible history. I mean, do you recall the first runway show you ever saw?
Ooh.
Two eyes.
With my two eyes, I think it was one of Galliano's, one of his geisha runways back in the 90s. Was it like
he was really, Galliano was really he was really fond of like Chinese and Japanese aesthetics from the 90s way until like 2008. Like they were always really, really peppered in there.
So I remember those early ones because I've always loved like geishas and stuff like that. And I love seeing it. I know it was problematic at the time. There was some red tape there, but I was just so enamored seeing these like gorgeous, like geisha inspired the makeup. I'm guessing that was Pat McGrath makeup,
yeah,
right?
I'm gonna assume.
because it was so dynamic and colorful and just the styling. And it kind of broke away from this more like stark and uptight model that we were kind of being presented in the early 90s. So yeah, that was my first one. How about you, Tosh?
I would probably say, like, my earliest memories of recalling runways, it was always Naomi Campbell.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I want to say that, like, the first time, and I feel like it was just, like, on the news. Mm-hmm. I think it was after Gianni Versace was killed that they were showing these, like, Versace runways. And I just kept seeing, you know, Naomi Campbell's, like, presence there. You know, all these really sexy silhouettes, these bold, bright colors. And then I feel like the first, like, runway show that I watched because of the lovely invention that is YouTube, I think, I'm, like, going back in my memory. It's fuzzy because it's around the time that I started smoking weed. I would probably have to say it was the Victor and Rolf Back to Bed collection, where all the models
are
in bed, basically.
Yes.
Because I remember seeing pictures. Oh, yes. Back in the day when Style.com, when you would go to Style.com and get, like, the rundown of all the runways. And so then I just, like, went to YouTube to watch it because I remember just thinking, like, wow, that's so cool. I want to see how that, like, moves, like, how that works. But runways for a long time, for the last century, have really been an opportunity for designers to make a presentation, essentially for buyers and future customers to, you know what it is that they're going to be producing, kind of like sell their shit. Sell the garment. The original version of runways were an opportunity for designers to really just present in front of buyers at major department stores for clients that would be, you know, mostly middle-class women.
Yes. I mean, they would spend the whole day at the department store.
Mm-hmm.
They would. That's why they have the restaurants. Like, I mean, we're from Chicago. Marshall Fields.
Yeah, you know I was about to shout out Marshall Fields, baby.
Yeah, like, I know that was luxury.
Yes.
That was luxury. And Mrs. Potter Palmer, I mean, socialite extraordinaire, like she would take her and all her homegirls and go shopping for the day. And, you know, they would just be shown these collections and she'd be like, I'll take one of everything.
Yes.
You know,
she's like, I like everything.
Yeah.
One of each for me, please. But also, you know, they really were kind of like these smaller, more intimate events for like serious customers and buyers to have an opportunity. The models would walk with like a number so that they knew exactly, like they would write down like, okay, that's number 64. That's the one that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was giving kind of like auction almost.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it was very, there was no fantasy. There was no theatrics to it. It was very practical. It was just a really practical way to be like, this is what we're coming up with. Do you want to buy it or not?
Yeah. And also think about it, production is so different nowadays because we do have fast fashion and it was slow fashion back then. So it's like, how many of this pattern? I only have a limited amount of fabric on this bolt. How many patterns am I cutting? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, how many are going to get produced, you know, and in what size? Because we're not making all this excess.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Not everybody can afford this for one. Mm-hmm. So everything is custom handmade, you know.
I feel like, too, it's an opportunity for them to understand how to put the collection into production, like you said, because it's like, you know, you have the buyers from the department stores. They basically come and immediately are kind of making their orders, letting you know, okay, we're going to want to carry this. We're going to want to carry this. I'm going to go back to the executives.
Right, and what's going to be popular? Well, like, what is drawing the most pull, you know? And you have to think these women are the trendsetters. These are these socialites that are like, people are going to be like, oh my God, what is she wearing? What is new this season? What is hot and fresh, you know?
Yeah.
So it makes total sense.
So as where in its origins, it really was kind of like giving like trade show realness.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Runways have since really evolved into such a theatrical display as a means to really create buzz around the collection itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like presentations overwhelmingly changed.
Yes.
After the Battle of Versailles in 1973, which, if you guys aren't familiar with the Battle of Versailles was really just like a charity function where America was really coming up in the ranks as being what was considered a fashion contender. You know, Paris and in France, they had always basically like held this title for being the pinnacle of what fashion is. It was held at the Palace of Versailles. And it was an opportunity for designers to basically come and compete for bragging rights, basically, for their country. America, they were definitely the underdogs in this scenario. No one was taking them very seriously. The French designers that they had showing were Marc Bowen for Christian Dior, Pierre Cardin, Hubert de Givenchy, Yves Saint Laurent, and Emmanuel Ungaro. And on the American side, we had Bill Blass, Stephen Burrows, Oscar de la Renta, Halston, and Anne Klein. So, long story short, the French, they came rolling in. They were like, okay, we're going to give you very Folies Bergères. There's going to be these sets.
Opulence.
And these carriages. And, like, literally, it was they basically, like, put on an opera. And, you know, this is 1973. I'm sure people's, like, Coke drip was, like, hitting. And they were just all like, baby, this, like, the pace of this is just all like, oh, my God, like, I don't know. And then the Americans came, and they're all like, okay, we're just going to act like this is, like, the fucking club. We don't have no sets. We only got these trunks of clothes. Like, we really don't have anything. And what they really brought to the forefront was the type of presentations that you saw in ball culture.
Yes.
And runways. And this, I think this is what's really important because, you know, we see documentaries like Paris is Burning, where, you know, what you're being shown is ball culture mimicking runways and fashion and voguing, you know, saying that it's, you know, what you're trying to do is replicate what you see in fashion magazines without really acknowledging the fact that ballroom really changed the landscape of fashion forever. Because when the Americans came out to make their presentation on the runway, you know, this long runway, while the French were really staying posted on the stage, they basically just turned up the music, had the lights going full force, and they were just all like, y'all bitches get out there and you just fucking walk. You get out there in these garments and you walk. And then the MVP of them all, the icon, the legend, the star, black supermodel extraordinaire, Pat Cleveland, she was walking for Halston. And Halston was just all like, yo, when you get out there, Pat, twirl. She had on this beautiful chiffon Grecian gown. And when Pat Cleveland hit that runway, she just twirled. Like, it was a motherfucking church fashion show. You know what I'm saying? That bitch was twirling her ass down that runway. And everyone was so enamored. They were like, she's going to twirl right off that edge. Like, she doesn't even realize where the edge is. She's twirling so fast. And baby, when Pat Cleveland got to the end of that runway, she stopped on a dime and the whole place went up and raucous
applause.
Baby, baby. They said, this is how we do it in the balls of New York, bitch.
Wow.
They said, y'all weren't ready for this energy, bitch. And it really changed. First of all, the Americans won, period. Yeah, they said, we don't need your sets. We don't need your carriages.
They didn't even have the home court advantage.
They did not have the home court advantage. Everyone was just like, oh, it was a very David and Goliath kind of tale. But fashion. And
yeah, and Pat was the slingshot.
Yes, baby. Yes, she was. Oh, my God. And it really changed the landscape of the way that runways were presented ever since, you know, like the idea of like the models just like having personality, the models really bringing themselves to the garments. Yes. The models, like, you know, breathing life into it instead of just being a hanger.
Yes, and models just being muses for mm-hmm. the collections themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And these models also having these personal relationships with the designers.
Yes, and also, too, I think it's important that we highlight Stephen Burrow's presence there because he was the only Black designer of France or the U.S. And if you guys don't know Stephen Burrows, definitely look him up. I feel like so much of Christopher John Rogers' DNA really, to me, calls back to Stephen Burrows. He was about color. He was about pattern. Mm-hmm. He was about edifying, uplifting Black women, showing a lot of 70s, you know, Black-centric style, like, you know, the type of stuff that you would see the girls rocking on Soul Train. Like, you know, it was very that kind of tea. But yeah, no, it definitely, definitely changed the landscape for fashion. And then all of a sudden, I feel like designers really started focusing on, you know, how do we really capture folks' attention in a way that, like, really amps up energy and excitement about this collection and gets people talking. Mm-hmm. Because now I feel like when it comes to runway shows, you know, with, like, social media and how things are instantly online for people to, like,
digest,
make opinions on, it really kind of becomes about a publicity stunt.
Absolutely.
You know, it's kind of like now, because, you know, it really is. It's a runway is really just marketing.
Yeah.
For the collection. Sure. So, like, now it seems like houses now are like, okay, how can we create a really memorable moment at this presentation that will get people talking?
Yeah, and, like, talking about publicity stunt, I think that's also so telling that a lot of these designers nowadays put so much of their audience in the current collection that they're showing, mm-hmm. because sometimes we don't even hear about the collection because it's all about what the guests were wearing and how they stunt out on shows too, which is mm-hmm. also publicity. But if they're wearing what's on the runway, it's like a double whammy, you
Absolutely.
Know? It's smart, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like gauche. It's kind of like if
I love
if,
that word.
Gauche.
Good old gauche.
Good old gauche. To, like, go to a runway, especially if you're sat front row, to not be wearing the designer, it's you know.
It's kind of sad. Yeah, like, when you sat front row at Valentino, you were, like, head to toe Valentino, because she's a Valentino girl.
Yeah. It's like, I don't show up to the Valentino runway wearing, I don't know, Tom Brown. That would be
embarrassing.
Right,
that'd be crazy. That'd be so weird.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Hello, it's me, Jamie Lang, and I've got a new podcast, and this time there are no gimmicks. It's just great company. Because the thing is, I realize the reason I love podcasts so much is because they're a great way to connect with people.
Hello, I'm Youngblood.
Joe Brand.
I'm Paloma Faith.
Jay Blades.
Elizabeth Day.
Zara Larson. Casper
Lee. And I'm Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Apparently.
It's Great Company with me, Jamie Lang. Coming Wednesday, the 27th of March.
Well, we've already talked about the history behind runway, and now we're going to pivot and talk about some of the MVPs, some of our favorite fashion designers and houses that really know how to put on a show.
Yes, because we definitely have our favorites.
Okay, if I were to name my favorite stunt queen, Alexander McQueen. Oh, see how I did that?
If I were to name my favorite stunt McQueen.
But seriously.
Seriously.
The
drama.
The drama.
The macabre.
The macabre.
So
you know, it just, I would probably have to say spring, summer, 1999
mm-hmm.
with Shalom Harlow
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the white, like, trumpet dress, mm-hmm. the white tent dress, and with that little sexy belt just at
yes,
the top.
Yes, just at belt. The top.
And then those robot arms that spray painted her with the green and the black while she was on that rotating platform.
Oh,
and also
God.
Her acting of it, like she was, like, you know, just so,
no, robot man.
Please, my dress, it's pure white.
Oh.
Oh my God. And like, just you were watching art being made right in front of your eyes. The garment was not complete before the runway, and you watched the garment come into its full form before your very eyes on the runway. Like, that is presentation. And also, I think that, like, a design duo that I love mm-hmm. personally, Victor and Rolf.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now, they know how to put on a show. Now, one that I remember seeing that I felt was so far ahead of its time, like, I'm gonna say, like, 11 years ahead of its time, mm-hmm. was their spring-summer collection where they did a digital fashion show, a digital runway, mm-hmm. where they filmed Shalom Harlow. Why is she always...
She's always... She's
getting,
that girl.
She is that girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Shalom Harlow, she is that girl.
Mm-hmm.
She was the only model.
Yep.
And so what they did was she walked every single garment, and then they superimposed her entrance as she was, like, exiting. So no matter what, like, as Shalom Harlow was leaving the runway, Shalom Harlow was coming around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was so impactful. There was no audience there,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously, because this was all done, like, pre-production-wise. And, like, I remember thinking back to this, like, during the pandemic when houses were trying to figure out ways...
How to present.
To produce and present shows in, mm-hmm. like, a way that, like... implemented social distance practices. And I was just all like, Victor and Rolf already did that back in 2009.
Right.
Like, they did that.
Right. And now we have all this AI fashion happening. Uh-huh. And it's just, it's crazy. Truly ahead of their time.
Absolutely. I mean, just even like their most recent, like, though the runway presentation in and of itself, like the way that the clothes were presented wasn't groundbreaking. The clothes themselves were just incredible at mm-hmm. Paris Fashion Week with all those floating ball gowns. I mean, we've talked about it before, but, like, I mean,
yeah.
they really do know how to put on a show.
Right. And, okay, and in terms of, like, sheer spectacle, I feel like we have to also talk about Iris Van Herpen, Schiaparelli, always iconic. You're always going to get opulence. You're always going to get no budget. You know, mm-hmm. it's just gorgeous. And also... Terry Mugler.
Oh, Terry. We just went to go and see the exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. So good.
So good.
It's so nice. Okay, because I've always just watched the shows on YouTube. And mm-hmm. so, you know, a lot of these shows are from, like, the 80s and 90s. So
yes.
maybe it ain't in HD.
Right,
so you
right.
can't see the details.
And the lighting's a little bad.
You know, like, you can't see the details. It's a little bit fuzzy. So getting a chance to see a lot of these pieces, like, up close
yes.
to see the way that they're fabricated and engineered was just so cool.
Yes. And just knowing that Terry Mugler was a costume designer, like
yes,
a stage
bitch.
Costume designer, which, you know, we live for. And I feel like just that background in theater just is already sets you up to put on such a dynamic show
mm-hmm.
because you know how to, like, paint for the back room, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. with the all the bells and whistles. And I mean, the way that he did those collections, like that insect collection, iconic. To see those pieces up close was all you heard in the rooms was, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. like everywhere you turned at the exhibit. So definitely check it out if you're ever in Brooklyn and have some time to kill.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really cute.
And you know what? Their presentation currently, mm-hmm. This past season was really fun because their runway was also the digital campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So you were watching their digital campaign being created in real time
because
mm-hmm. they were filming it. It's like the cameras, the models, you know, they're being like rolled on these carts and things like
yes.
that, you know, doing all these fun poses while these moving cameras are around them. You know, it was really, really cool to see that. Now, I feel like in that same breath, the presentation in and of itself was really strong marketing because I felt like the presentation was stronger than the clothes.
Yeah, that's true. And that happens a lot, honestly.
Yeah. Casey Cobblatter, creative director over at Mugler right now. I love the way that he has helped to take a brand that was really fanciful, mm-hmm. one-of-a-kind pieces that, you know, obviously not everyone can wear.
Right.
And turned it very approachable. My one gripe about it is that fast fashion has been ripping it off relentlessly.
Left and right.
And I feel like what it's doing is kind of like diluting the brand.
Yeah.
You know?
You know he has a collection coming out with H&M.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. H.N. Mugler. Yeah, so we'll see about, you know, that I have feelings as someone who is a huge fan of Terry Mugler's genius. Whether is Mugler supposed to be that approachable?
I don't think so. I want the fantasy. I want the costumes. I want the sequins, the feathers,
uh-huh.
the rhinestones. I need the hand beading.
Uh-huh.
I need the 3D printing.
Yes.
Yeah.
The text.
I need it all.
The fabricate. Yes. The fantasy.
Yes. Like, I need the whole fantasy.
It's all. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We need.
And the accessories. Oh my God. Mugler's accessories are so good. Oh my God.
So
the
good.
Bags, the shoes, the hats, the jewelry. Oh, yes.
I just want for that little wink to be brought back.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't have that same think.
Yeah.
You know, sexy, yes, it always has been.
Yes.
You know, that's very much so in the brand's DNA. But I feel like, you know, we're getting to a place, at least within the presentations, but that's brand specifically where I feel like the runway presentation is kind of, you know, doing a little bit more than the clothes themselves.
Yeah.
But you got to sell it, baby.
Yes.
You got to sell
yes,
it.
Yes, you do have to you sell it.
It's all about selling the clothes. I mean, fashion is art meets commerce. So you got to sell it, baby. So we've talked about the history of runways. We've talked about our MVPs, some of our faves. And with that comes some people who do not deliver as far as runways are concerned. And so, you know, we were kind of briefly talking about the shift in the Mugler brand,
mm-hmm.
how now, you know, we feel like the presentation is more impactful recently than the clothing itself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like another brand, we were talking about this earlier before we started recording, but Balenciaga.
They've know, regressed.
Like, to the point, like, to the point where it has become memeable.
Yeah.
People literally make TikToks and memes wrapping themselves in
household
in
items,
raincoats and
yeah.
blankets, carrying bags of trash with like milk crates on their feet, stomping through like, you know,
their
back
house.
Alleys.
Yeah.
You
is,
know?
But is that their approach? Is that just to get people talking, you know, and like just to sell the garment? It's a cheap shot.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, people are talking about it.
Right.
You know, like I'm just so over this like post-apocalyptic crap. Like if we needed to see that, we could just turn on the news.
Yeah.
Like literally
yeah.
I'm the fashion is for the fantasy and I'm going to need something a little bit more uplifting.
Yeah.
I don't need to see these bitches fearing for their life.
This is what a jersey, this is what your jersey gown would look like if you were walking through a blizzard.
Yeah.
With no coat. You too could look this fabulous in
windswept.
Wind
Stop!
Next comes the model down the runway with a broom. Sweeping up all the snow. I mean, okay, because it makes me think about the look that they did on Kim Kardashian when she came as a VIP guest for that collection. They basically just wrapped her in Balenciaga caution tape.
Right.
So what is the market price for the Balenciaga caution tape? Does it come with the application too? Is there someone there to wrap you in the Balenciaga caution tape?
Did they really sell that caution tape?
I hope not.
Jesus Christ. You know what? I could see McQueen doing that and having it be such a stunt, and I wouldn't be so mad about it, but I feel like Balenciaga's so thirsty with it, and like, that is such a cop-out.
Like, okay, did you see the Frito-Lay bags?
No, I didn't.
So they had $1,200 bags that looked like a bag of potato chips.
Oh, wait, no, I did. I did. And that was, no, that was a no. Yeah, I feel like it's trolling at this point.
Right. Okay, because then you know, they had the presentation like right before the shit hit the fan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, with the...
Ironic, too, because the models basically were like trudging through mud and shit.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I literally had seen people like, mama, because first of all, what happens if you get stuck? You imagine you're the model.
You just
you're
get doing trampled
your very,
on.
You're doing your very best because I've stepped in some deep mud before in my life.
Right.
And sometimes you lose a shoe.
And it creates a suction. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what do you do? And then what do you do? So then you, now I gotta go through these inches of mud barefoot.
Or just lay down and let them walk over you.
Now that would be a sign. We would be talking. We would really be talking.
Right.
So then here we are talking about it now.
Here we are.
They're getting exactly what they wanted.
Right. True trolls. Demna.
Yeah. Yeah. What that, Demna? Goodness.
Look at Demna. Yeah.
They're all like, oh, you want to go to that show? Demna.
Well, speaking of trolls, we have to talk about Kanye West and his fashion shows and choices.
In the words of Beyonce's hit song, Irreplaceable, thank God I dodged a bullet. because his last show at Paris Fashion Week back in October, I received a lovely invite from the one and only Naomi Campbell.
Your friend.
Yes, my friend. She referred to me as her friend. she was just like, oh, would you like to come to the Yeezy show? I'll put you on my list. And I was just like, yeah, absolutely. You know, just like let me know the time or whatever. Ended up, I was doing this shoot for Harper's Bazaar that was like at the same time. So I couldn't go, you know, darn. But...
Yeah, you dodged a bullet.
Yes, because that's where him and that fucking jigaboo Candace Owens were out there fucking tap dancing for the white man with the White Lives Matter t-shirt. I have never wanted to kick two black folks so firmly in the asshole before in my life. Like, literally, like square in the hole. I wanted to kick them so far in their assholes for that shit. Like... First, okay, let me collect myself.
I mean,
like, y'all, those white dollars are not going to save you in the end, bitch.
Right.
Let me tell you, those white dollars will not save you in the end. Stop dancing around soft shoe tap dancing for all these conservative white people that the moment that you walk out of that door are going to turn around and call you a nigga. Okay? You know what I'm saying? So stop. It's embarrassing. It is so embarrassing. Y'all look a fool.
Yeah.
And the clothes weren't even cute.
No, they weren't. No.
So all of that, for what?
For what?
Just to piss me off.
Just to troll people. Literally just to get them talking. Like, that's literally, any publicity is good publicity. It's disgusting.
Ew.
Yeah. Ew. Wah.
White lives matter. Oh my God. Like, come on now. He is so far gone.
Yeah.
Baby.
He's married again. Isn't that crazy?
Baby, what?
Yeah, I just saw something.
This just in. Kanye West.
No, they literally took a paparazzi shot of him with his new wife, who I can't remember her name. And, you know, they're like commenting on Kanye being like, oh, he looks a little thick. And I'm like, he went through a divorce and shit, like, you know, and a new marriage, apparently. Who knows if it's real? Yeah. Who knows if they actually filed it?
Oh, so we're going to shame him for not taking Ozempic? Okay. Oh, not me over here signing with Kanye.
No, but the main thing is people were commenting being like, that does not look like Kanye. Like, that looks like someone else. Like, literally so far gone that he has no spark, no joy. Like, literally sunken place type shit.
Mm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. Get out the sunken place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems what I don't know when, I don't know where, but some white woman with a teacup got him together. Uh-huh.
Got I just him. Got chills.
Uh huh.
Yeah. That.
Come back.
Yeah.
Come back. Get out of the sunken place, Kanye. Come back. But don't put on any fashion shows while you're
here.
Yeah,
please, no more fashion shows, Kanye. We're over it.
Yeah.
And his stuff was always about selling bullshit. Because it's like, you know, the Yeezy Foam Runners. Like, those are, you know, $4 worth of rubber.
Rubber.
You know, made in some sweatshop. And I'm like, every place is knocking them off, and you could get them for $20 now.
Yeah, and now all these white tech bros at Soho House are wearing them, thinking that they're the coolest thing on the planet. You're not.
You're not. You promise. Yeah. I promise you, you're not. But yeah, nah.
Nah.
Nah. Nah. Nah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, look, not all fashion shows can be winners. No. You know? Not all fashion shows are created equal.
And not, I wouldn't consider all fashion shows to be fashion shows. Some of them are mere spectacle.
Yeah. Some of them are just shows.
Yeah.
Some of them are just
a fashion show without fashions.
How dreadful. Well, y'all, that has been another episode of It's Giving Fashion. Bitch, I'm Shea Coulee.
And I'm Tiger Lily, bitch.
And until next time, bitch, you better go like and subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast so you can make sure that you are the first to know about each new episode coming out every Thursday, bitch.
Bitch.
That's right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bitch.
Puta.
It's Giving Fashion is produced by Something Else, a Sony Music Entertainment company. The executive producers are Sarita Wesley and Jasmine Henley Brown.
Medina Parwana is senior producer, Rob Dozier is producer, and Sunny Balkan is associate producer. This show is engineered by Samantha Gatzik.
And Gatzik!
That's cute. I.